Welcome to Edible Words, as we delve into the world of creative food and experience design. We bring together inspiring people from different backgrounds to talk about past, current, and future food and design trends. From food culture to eating spaces, food science, and experience design, we want to talk about it all. Add to that a pinch of well-being, curiosity, sustainability, creativity, and of course, our senses. I'm Maud, a creative food and experience designer based in London in the UK, although I like to move quite a lot, so you might find me elsewhere. I'm the founder of Salty Studio, a food design studio exploring innovative and sensory experiences around food. Edible Words was born during the first lockdown in 2020, after all my events were cancelled, and most of everyone else's. And I've really enjoyed connecting with amazing people from around the world. Join us as we embark on this journey to understand more about our connection with food through design systems. Hi Rose, it's so great to have you here. So I know we've obviously been trying to set a date for this podcast for a while, and even we were meant to record it yesterday and time zones and everything, but I'm really happy to finally exactly do it. So could you maybe start with giving us a little quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Rose McAdoo. I am US-based, kind of between New York, Alaska, and Antarctica, which is a difficult trifecta to manage, but it's very fun. And I use desserts to make big ideas digestible. So communicating stories about our environment and about human populations around the world through food.
So yeah, as some people might know or might not know, but you started your journey on social media, well, in the middle of other things, and you called your profile name Whisk Me Away Cakes. And I actually heard about you through another cake historian, through one of our past talks, which was really inspiring. And so I'm just curious to know what that sort of meant to you at the time, and like what were you mostly sharing and working on when you first started?
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to be a pastry chef, you know, when I was 13, and so came up with the name Whisk Me Away Cakes back in the day in seventh grade, and it served me really well. I was doing a lot of custom cakes, you know, kind of the typical trajectory, starting out with birthday cakes and the wedding cakes, and really enjoyed that quite a lot. But eventually, as I got older and I matured and my work matured and I, you know, became acquainted with more of the world, I wanted to be using the cake that I was working with and using my medium to actually tell larger stories and communicate what I felt were more important aspects of our, you know, global existence. And it's actually been in the last 2 weeks that I've switched away from Whisk Me Away Cakes and have identified as myself. And that has been a really exciting transition as I've kind of, you know, over the years, you know, from 13 to 31, which I am now, my work has become me and I've become my work. And those things felt less disconnected than they used to. And now it feels very personal and it feels very much like who I am. And so I wanted to really present as myself as opposed to a bakery per se.
I know we were just talking about it and how I actually feel quite a lot the same. And I think a lot of people who are really passionate about their work find it actually hard to separate their work and themselves because it's their work is part of themselves. So
yeah.
I know I have two separate and well actually multiple
so many.
Instagram accounts as well. And it is sometimes hard to think, well, shouldn't everything be in the same place? Because I am a food designer and that's how I would present myself. But I think I think it's up to each person to sort of think how when should things sort of come together or if you want to keep things separate. But yeah, I completely get it because I think it is mostly when you're so passionate about your work that it's sort of part of your day to day. It's part of everything.
Well, one more thing about that too. So as I'm applying for, you know, opportunities and artist residencies and it made more sense also to present as an artist as opposed to a bakery. So you know, why would Whisk Me Away Cakes want to go into the backcountry of Alaska with federal park rangers? You know, it makes more sense applying as the individual or the artist. And I think, too, like so much emphasis is put on being a brand and having this, you know, this company that you run or this personal brand or whatever it is, which is great. I just think it's also really exciting to just be yourself in a world that's, you know, so focused on personal branding. And just kind of, for me, it's been helpful to reconsider what that looks like. Like, am I a brand? Is my work a brand? Or is this who I am as a creator and maker? Like, creator is not necessarily the word I want to use, but as a maker and a creative person. And I think that that balance and reevaluation has been really fun too.
And so where's your passion for the environment and also communities come from?
It actually came from New York. Yeah, making cakes in a beautiful cake space in Brooklyn overlooking the Statue of Liberty. We had these kind of floor-to-ceiling glass windows right on the waterfront. Sounds much fancier than it is. It just was a very cool, funky little studio next to a jujitsu place and had a great view. And making cakes and looking out at the Statue of Liberty over so many sunsets, you know, over many years. It was just a really, it gave me a lot of perspective, I think, just that single view. And I did a lot of thinking about all the people that lived in that city. It's such a melting pot. I learned so much and became really close friends with a lot of, you know, immigrants and refugees and people who've moved there from God knows where. And it just made a lot more sense to me to be highlighting those stories as opposed to these very fancy or celebrity events. You know, those felt less important to me, especially during our last presidency. Obviously, was very chaotic, and it felt like I had this opportunity and this tool to be really highlighting stories that I felt were important, and using cake felt like a really accessible way to start introducing our U.S. population to maybe some people and environments that they weren't always exposed to. And then also just being in New York, I really craved the mountains and craved the backcountry. I had, you know, headed up to Alaska when I was 19 and 20, did a lot of moving around and a lot of backcountry stuff earlier on, and then lived in New York for 6 years, which was the best move I ever made. But I definitely really missed the mountains and the forests. And so the combination of living in this very urban jungle, but wanting to get out into the remote wilderness again, really inspired the next steps for WISC and made me want to get back out into it.
Yeah, I think we're very similar on that, and I'll touch on that a bit more later about sort of combining living in cities and then in the outdoor areas. So can you tell us a bit more about why you decided to use the medium of food in particular for, like, these, as you're saying, educational purposes, and like, why sweet things and cake specifically?
First of all, it's what I was already doing, so I felt like I had a good handle on it, which was nice. But I also, it's a real challenge. It's baking, obviously you work with a more limited recipe and ingredient kind of base. Obviously there's a ton of variety in the baking and pastry world, but if you are working with cakes and baked goods, you're relying on a pretty set list of ingredients. And so from there, from those building blocks, there's a lot of room for play. But I do find it really exciting, the challenge of figuring out how to tell stories via baked goods and desserts. But in addition, it is really cool to have, you know, stories are so easily translated through food, and chefs all over the world present themselves and their home bases and their friendships and their love through food. That's very common. But what I've found as I was curious if these weird ideas would work or had any authenticity in the world, there wasn't a lot of people specifically limiting their use of food as story to just desserts. And I thought that there was a lot of huge potential impact there, because cakes and desserts and sweets are so inherently celebratory. And you know, a dessert demands that you stop, you acknowledge the people that you're with. It is pretty hard to be a miserable grump when you're eating dessert with other people. And even in the hardest situations, desserts are this kind of light and this brief moment of joy. And I think that there's so much opportunity there to highlight different populations and shift the focus of our storytelling and also rethink like what we want to be celebrating. You know, it's great to celebrate a wedding. Obviously, I'm very pro-wedding, but there's so much more to celebrate other than a wedding or a birthday with cake and with dessert. You know, we can highlight the people who are protecting our wild spaces and our environment. We can celebrate the migratory process when people get their citizenship. You know, there's so much more there. And dessert is inherently safe also. Like, people don't try and do ill will through dessert very often. And so what I've learned through my work is that bringing cakes into a prison yard or bringing cakes into a group of people that are really struggling to find joy in life, like, that creates a really safe space. It creates a space where people are not frightened or uncomfortable, and it brings a lot more opportunity for connection too. And there's, you know, at least in New York, I don't know if this is true in London and Paris and all of the other amazing European places that you've lived, but in New York, the first question that anyone asks is, what do you do? And so much of our self-worth is put on our work. And, you know, that's a very American thing in general, right? Like, productivity and work, it comes first. But with that, there's also opportunity to talk about your work constantly. And so to be able to use your work and use what you do to actually highlight other populations or stories or, you know, bigger entities is a really cool luxury to be able to do that too. I think dessert is kind of a one-stop shop and really hits, it checks, checks all my boxes, and it's more accessible for people, I think, too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd love to be able to try some of your desserts one day. I know. Day, so one, hope that we can make that happen.
We need to collaborate in person, finally.
No, I think that's so inspiring what you do. And actually, so to delve a bit more into this, I remember seeing one of your posts on Instagram, and it mentioned that the US is only 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's incarcerated people. So for those who don't know yet, Rose has been teaching cake decorating and other things, I think, to people in prison. So what actually led you to do that, and why did you feel that it was important?
It definitely stemmed from my own curiosity and my own exploration as a person. My dad was incarcerated when I was 8, and we still don't have any relationship, which is fine with me, but I have definitely done a lot of work in that process of figuring out, you know, what that looks like and what that actually means. I had a lot of confusion about whether, like, I didn't know how I even felt about people being able to access these kind of self-bettering opportunities in prisons or jails. I kind of thought, like, shouldn't people just sit there and be miserable and think about what they've done and, like, get punished? That's kind of the point. Now I feel very much the opposite after these workshops, and it was such a wild experience to be able to walk into LA County State Prison and host an, you know, 2-hour workshop with 20 men serving life without parole. And I wasn't necessarily teaching cake decorating. There's not enough time in the world to, you know, you really got to start from square one in that environment for yep. cake decorating purposes. But it was, the workshop was based more on a storytelling component. And so in LA, working with, like I said, 20 men serving life without parole, we split into 4 different groups, and each group decorated a tiered cake based on a question, you know, a prompt. And because they had spent so long in prison, they had a really, really great network of trust between them, and they could be really vulnerable in front of each other, and they could work really well as a team. However, when I went into Rikers Correctional Facility in New York later that same year, that workshop was with 16 women, and they were serving either their first or repeat sentence. Most of them were awaiting trial, hadn't even been proven guilty of anything or convicted of a crime. And Rikers is a very notorious facility, obviously one of the worst in the world. And I got to go host that workshop the day that they announced they were going to be closing Rikers, which was also very impactful. And in that workshop, like, it's really dangerous to be vulnerable. It's really, or in that facility, excuse me, it's not safe to be open with who you are. Like, you close off, you protect yourself, and you toughen up pretty fast. And so in that workshop, I brought in individual cakes, and each woman actually decorated their own cake to tell whatever story they wanted to. And that was also a really cool experience. That workshop was much harder, for a whole host of reasons that would take an hour to talk about, but that was a really challenging workshop. Yeah. But it ended up being so much more than I ever imagined walking in. And, women decorated their cakes to talk about, you know, domestic abuse that they had experienced, or shifting their values based on their process with the carceral system, mistakes that they had made before, hopes that they had for their future. A lot were based around family and trying to reunite with their, you know, kids or partners. There was just such a diversity of story in that workshop as well. I just really learned a lot about myself as a person, and it really confirmed the power of storytelling through cake, right? And again, created that safe space, created that opportunity for openness, even in some of the world's hardest spaces to create that feeling. And so was very excited to continue doing those workshops, and COVID rolled in, and obviously the COVID pandemic has really obliterated prisons and jails and detention facilities. So we're on hold briefly. I know that they're starting to very slowly open up programming. California is pretty forward thinking on that. So they're starting to slowly let people back in for recreational programming and stuff. But I mean, the more arts programming, in short, that goes into these facilities, I think the better it is. And I've really turned around on rethinking, you know, jails and prisons from a misery standpoint to an opportunity for rehabilitation. And everyone's on their own path with forgiveness for things, I think, but people should still have the opportunity to express themselves and think about things and figure out what their life could look like moving forward. And if I can do that through cake, even in a tiny 2-hour workshop, I want to work on doing that.
Yeah, it's so inspiring. I find that amazing that you've been able to do that. I think it really shows as well the power of food. Obviously not just cake decorating, as I said earlier. Yeah. But I think that's why, I mean, that's partly why I work in food as well, because, and I really want to try and explore that. And I admire people who are using food to tell stories, a lot more, and things that are really important to certain people. It's really inspiring. I mean, I keep thinking we should have food during our history classes and things like that, because then the more you use your food and obviously the five senses as well, then the more something is more memorable. And I think there's, again, loads of stories that you can talk through that. I think it's also amazing the work you've done in prisons, because I think I think the prison situation is different in the US and in different countries, in the UK and France and other countries like that, and it's still quite a mystery, I think, for a lot of us who don't know much about the whole prison system, and I think as you said, it's quite difficult to know how to feel about these people who are in there. But I think it's so inspiring to try and find ways to help them get out of that vicious circle, because obviously a lot of people who are in prisons are in there repeatedly, and actually not that many stay out of it. So I think it's amazing to try and think of some creative and fairly safe ways as well for them to feel more passionate about something and to feel heard and hopefully that will help.
Thanks. Yeah, our country has such a huge issue, obviously, with slavery, and that has impacted our judicial system today, like, very, very much. And so there's so many people that are stuck in the U.S. prison cycle or jail circle that don't need to be there, quite honestly. And we also have a huge focus in this country of keeping people in the dark about what goes on in those systems. And so there's no way for people, you know, whatever, quote unquote, normal people on the outside, like there's no real way for them to gain any understanding about the system. And so, yeah, I think exactly what you're saying, using the food to create space for education and learning. Also, definitely food should be in history classes because I found history so boring until I started traveling and eating in all these different places. And learning about the spice trade and the slavery trade and all of these different cultures through food, it made it so much more engaging. So anytime that we can use food to tell those bigger stories and those more important connection points is like such a no-brainer to me and clearly to you. So getting more people to do that, I think, is awesome.
Well, actually, about that, as I said earlier, I think we've got both a really big passion for traveling and actually going to slightly unusual places sometimes. And so you've been to Antarctica and Alaska, of all places, kind of two opposites, which I'm really dreaming to go to one day. And you've casually actually spent the part of the first lockdown, I think, of the pandemic in Antarctica as well. When we first spoke, I found that really impressive because I think with everything going on, I think some people, we forget that some people were in quite particular places where they couldn't actually go anywhere. And I think, your day-to-day life must have changed quite a bit. So what's your relationship with those places? I think those two in particular, and like, what do they mean to you also in terms of your career around food?
Antarctica was such a blessing in more ways than I could ever, I mean, I don't think I even have any perspective on it yet, you know, only a couple years in. I think when I'm 80, I'll really see the full circle of how that's helped me be myself. But Antarctica and Alaska are these really cool, surprisingly interconnected communities, you know, lovingly known as polar people. There's a lot of people who do Alaska work in the summer and then Antarctica work also in the summer, but on the southern hemisphere side. And those seasons really line up well for seasonal workers. And so there's tons of us that go back and forth, which is really cool. And there's obviously they are two of the wildest places that I've ever traveled. And I think that exist. There's so much earth and land that's untouched there. And I believe should remain untouched. And it's really, you know, being in those spaces for such significant portions of time have been so formative for me. Like I went up to Alaska on a real whim. I got a job offer and moved up there 5 days later when I was 19 to work on a train in Alaska. And I feel like I really got to, become a much more interesting little young woman at that point, getting to see spaces that I hadn't seen and getting to exist in this more wild environment. That was the first time that I went backpacking and learned so much more about bear safety, gained a lot more confidence, which I'll touch on more in a minute too. And that's actually that summer when I was, or I guess the next summer when I was 20 is when I first learned about the opportunity to go to Antarctica. But it was just kind of existed in the back of my mind for a long time. And then, you know, in 2018, after living in New York City for 6 years, having all of my dream jobs, I felt like I couldn't go anywhere better than New York that would stimulate me as much, that would give me access to so many different, ways of thinking and populations of people. And I just felt like I'd hit the jackpot in Brooklyn. And I kind of felt like there was not going to be a bigger adventure for me at that time other than going to Antarctica, and decided I was really going to regret it if I never did. So put in an application, did weeks and weeks of paperwork and medical testing to get physically qualified to go down there. And hands down, one of the best things I've ever done. It was just, it's otherworldly to be able to go and work and live in Antarctica and to be able to stare out at this vast white ice sheet that just goes on for as far as the eye can see, and to watch the icebreaker ship roll in and carve this channel in when you haven't had any kind of you haven't seen anything on the horizon in 3 months, and here comes this massive cargo ship with 3 years worth of food and construction materials. And now it's a pretty wild experience.
Wow.
But more than anything, Antarctica really gave me the opportunity to expand my world and my career outside of food. It did a lot for me as far as introducing me to so many different aspects of science, encouraged me to think in really unique ways. It really stimulated my mind more than anywhere else I've ever been. But it also, you know, gave me the opportunity to work at a NASA field camp and learn how to operate a bulldozer and forklift and join the search and rescue team in the middle of winter and build these huge events out of nothing but like cardboard and trash because that's what we had to decorate with. And it just stimulated my mind in so many ways that I never expected. And it really gave me so much confidence as a woman who had only ever worked in kitchens for, you know, 16 years to be carrying a shipping container on my forklift, driving backwards in the pitch dark winter, you know, under the Aurora Australis and the Southern Lights. Those moments are what actually really gave me confidence to say, like, I can do bigger things. I can do other things. And that has really translated to my work with, you know, Whisk Me Away Cakes or as an artist. It's given me a lot of confidence to bite off more than I can chew with concepts that I have floating around in my brain or with events that I'm pitching where on the inside I'm like, oh God, I don't know if I can actually pull this off, right? But I'm going to pitch it anyway and see what happens. And I think being in places where you are a little pinprick in this vast wilderness, that very much translates for me to the creative experience also. And just a willingness to like go for it and what's the worst thing that can happen. I feel very lucky to call both Antarctica and Alaska home and then to have New York as this base of like inspiration and creative stimulation too. It's like a bizarre triangle of homes, but it really just fills me up in every way.
Yeah, not the closest. No, for sure.
Definitely not. Definitely need different outfits for each too.
So can you actually tell us a bit more about the latest project that you've been working on, raising awareness about glaciers through a dessert box, which I've been fascinated about on Instagram.
Thank you. It's definitely the most exciting project I've ever done for my own, you know, my own excitement around my work. In Alaska this last summer, I was a glacier guide and so led hiking and ice climbing trips up on Exit Glacier in Seward, Alaska, and then also on a couple other glaciers that we would access via helicopter. And it was such an awesome experience to be able to bring American citizens from Texas, of all places, or, you know, Oklahoma or wherever, Florida, lots of Floridians, you know, to be able to introduce them to glaciers and walk them out on this massive chunk of flowing ice and explain the basics over and over and over, because in that environment, the basics aren't basic, right? Like, why is this giant hole brilliant crystal blue? Why is this space flat and that space is like a giant cluster of breaking ice over, you know, over our heads, many, many stories. Why is this waterfall here? And then why does it just disappear? You know, where does it go? And to be able to explain all of those different things to, you know, a dozen people every single day, it really made me wish like, oh man, I wish that I could bring everyone out here. I wish that everyone had the opportunity to experience huge pieces of ice. Like, those are my favorite things anywhere in the world, just glaciers and ice sheets and ice caps. I am so amazed by them and so fascinated by them. And I want to be able to share them. And so it was really exciting when I developed this idea of the, I'm calling them dessert stories. This was the Glacier Collection. And I put together 5 different desserts. These were all candies because I was worried about shipping baked goods and wanted to kind of trial beta test this with candy first. So it was a lot of gummies and kind of truffles and a fruit leather and some crystals and a lollipop, each of which explained a different aspect of glacier formation and glacier science. I also designed a 12-page booklet that was full color with a bunch of photos that I had taken from my time in Alaska and Antarctica, as well as during my artist residency in the North Cascades mountain range, which is in Washington State. And just put together all of the things that excited me most about glaciers, and then used desserts to explain each of those scientific accuracies. And I was hoping that we could sell 100 boxes. I figured I'd probably get like 40 or 50 orders, and ended up selling out in less than 24 hours, doubled the amount that we were going to make, which I did not think we could actually pull off. Ended up sending out 206 boxes to 34 different states.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was such a wildly exciting creative project to have a lot of my closest cake decorating friends like volunteer their time to help execute this project over a week. But also to see these stories and, you know, to see people all over the country eating these gummy ice worms and learning about those colonies that live on glaciers, and to be able to share those stories and bring them into people's homes was just, as a creative person, like so wildly entertaining and thrilling. And so I'm really excited to continue developing the dessert stories collections. And I'd really like to do an artist residency with a forest fire team and do a whole collection that talks about fire science and forest conservation. I'd love to do one on ocean acidification and coral populations in Hawaii. You know, would love to do more work in the space community. And there's, I just think that these dessert story collection boxes have such a unique way to communicate information and really engage like a wild array of ages and populations too. I think it's, I don't know, I feel like I've hit something that I'm really excited about. So I'm hoping that that translates to other people as well. Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Definitely. I mean, I'm already like envisioning those. That they sound amazing.
Thanks. I need a team. I need help.
Well, we'll see if we can maybe, yeah, work on some then. Yeah, I think that's so amazing. I think it's so nice to send things, I think, as well. I really like that idea of receiving things, because I think obviously we receive a lot of like online shopping stuff, I think, at home. But I don't think we, I don't know, I love the thrill of receiving something at home, not really knowing what to expect, and then finally opening up, the unboxing, the physical side of as well, looking at it. And yes, I think I'm really, yeah, interested to see what you come up with next.
Thanks. Yeah, I think the, especially with COVID too, everyone's stuck at home, and yeah, there's such a message of like, mm-hmm, doom and gloom in our environmental conservation practices, right? It's just a miserable, depressing thing. All of our glaciers are melting, our oceans are acidifying, species are going extinct, and it's just like overwhelming. And it makes people really not want to engage anymore, or not even know what role they could have.
Yeah.
It's boring to go online and read an article about climate change. It sucks, honestly. And so to be able to re-engage people, mm, in this really fun, playful way and use desserts to play with climate change and like create a fun space to interact with our environment shifting, I think that is also a really important piece too. And like you said, especially, yeah, as people are stuck at home, like to have this thing that comes to them that brings a glacier into their home, or brings a, you know, whatever, is really powerful and really cool and just fun. And I think we need more fun right now. It's a really depressing time to be a person. And so we need some more fun in our lives, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think I love that it's appealing to everyone, to all ages, I think, because we're curious as adults as well. And I think it's great to learn a bit more about some of these topics. And then young children as well, it means that they learn for the future. So
yeah, like why do kids get to do all the learning?
Yeah. So we've got some final quick questions that I thought would be fun to ask you.
Yeah.
And then before we wrap up, but what's something that you are dreaming to make with food?
I want to do museum installations so badly once museums get back in operation and full swing. You know, I really want to be making edible experiences that people walk through and can actually engage and like take things off the wall and eat these giant kind of data plot points, and I just think that there's so much, like we've been talking about, so much room for storytelling through dessert. And I want to bring those into more educational spaces, locations that have bigger budgets, obviously, that can support larger storytelling efforts. And I just want to do this thing bigger and have a team and keep putting desserts where they don't belong. That is something that I really want to do as soon as possible.
Sounds so fun. Yeah, I'm actually doing one of my final projects at uni actually around palm oil, and I wanted to do it on, I mean, it was a bit just on the surface, but for museums as well, something quite interactive. So
that's awesome.
I think museums are a really fun place because in some way there's a lot of creative freedom, I think. And actually sometimes the more I find the crazier sort of something is, the more fun it is, especially for children and adults as well. But I think trying to put a bit more fun into the education side of things.
And you already have an audience that wants to learn. Like they've already opted in by going to a museum, and you can just have their full attention. You can really run wild with it, which is cool.
So the next question is, what place in the world is on your bucket list if you could go somewhere?
Yes. I had a very fun time dating in New York City through my 20s. And one of those people is still a very close friend of mine. He is currently in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And I've been to the DRC on the eastern side of Goma, kind of on the Rwanda border. But I am dying to go to Kinshasa in any way that's actually, in a way that makes sense and is doable. Kinshasa has this wild wedding culture, and the, you know, African cakes in general feed like 600 people. I got to make and deliver a bunch of wedding cakes in Rwanda, and they were, it's just some of the most fun cake decorating work that I've ever had the chance to participate in. So I'd love to go to Kinshasa, see the wedding culture there. Of all the weddings, I know Indian weddings are a big deal too, but there's something about the African wedding that just excites me to no end. So I would love to go there and work with some cake decorators in the city center. And I think that would be just the highlight of my career.
And so last of these quick questions, if you could have dinner with a famous or unfamous person, alive or not, who would it be?
Let's see. COVID has taught me so much about the value of my relationships, and my best friend is battling a terminal brain tumor, and I honestly just want to have all my dinners with her. So that is more than anything creatively. Like, she has been my biggest support in my work, and I just appreciate people who support creative work so much, and she's been just like there for me from the beginning when I was making little cakes that didn't say anything. And so I just want to have all my dinners with her, to be 100% honest. I think it would also be really cool to bring all of my favorite Instagram makers together too, and just have everyone over for a big dinner and drinks. I think that would be really fun. Introduce everyone that I find the most creatively engaging and exciting. And I think that would be an amazing dinner party as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see how COVID has changed us. I know we obviously talk about it all the time and getting a bit fed up of talking about it, but I think it has sort of, on one side, as you said, made us realise that, some people won't always be there, and it's really important to cherish these moments and to really try and connect more. But I think it's, as you said about your sort of these Instagram friends, I think it's the same as me. I think it's also been so amazing because it's actually made it a lot easier to connect with people from around the world, like we're doing today.
Yeah, like we've never met in person, and I feel so close to you and excited about everything you're doing. Yeah, it's really cool that we have this chance to connect in the way that we do. And COVID did propel that forward as well. So looking at the small silver linings here and there, I think is important. And also, not to ramble on, but you and I both live a very mobile lifestyle, which is a wonderful privilege and joy, but it's also really hard to feel connected to a community a lot of times when you're moving all the time and you don't get to just have dinner with all your girlfriends every week. And so in that sense, it's really nice too, to be able to cherish your friendships and connect with people virtually. And I feel very grateful for Zoom and all of those tools that we have yeah. now, Instagram being one of them.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree. I think it's so nice to, especially I think when you do something that's quite slightly unusual to what other people in your environment are doing, I think it's nice to have this sort of online community with people you can share similar thoughts and
yes.
be like, oh, you thought of this too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like glacier guiding in Alaska was so awesome. I made some of the best friends I've ever made, but I also really missed my like New York creative nonstop hustle maker community too. And so it's nice to have the Instagram world to still dive back into when you get off the ice and still connect with all of your artist people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really love that.
Well, it was so lovely to talk to you today. I really admire the work that you do, and it's so nice to be able to connect like this. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you get up to next.
Thank you. You are so wonderful. I'm obsessed with everything you do. I'm very excited to be able to fly to each other and help with projects moving forward whenever that is possible. But thanks so much for having me and asking such great questions.
Thank you for listening to this crunchy episode. If you found it interesting, please do share it around. You can follow any updates about Salty Studio and Edible Words over on our Instagram or on our website. It's www.saltystudio.co.uk/ediblewords. See you next time.